Welcome back to Asher classes. We're coming towards the end of the Bab Hajj. I don't know if we're going to get it finished today, but we'll try, inshallah. أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم والصلاة والسلام وعلى خير المرسلين وعلى آله وأصحابه أجمعين ولا حول ولا قوة إلا بالله العلي العظيم سبحانك اللهم لا علم لنا إلا ما علمتنا إنك أنت العليم الحكيم. So for those who weren't here last week, we've been going through the chapter on Hajj. We've been going through a step-by-step detailed guide that Ibn Ashir is giving to people who are coming from Morocco. So he first mentioned the miqat that they arrive at. Then he mentioned them going into Ihram. And I've just given a quick little map here to make it easier to see. You go into Ihram at the miqat. Then you come from the miqat, which is, you know, quite a distance, like hundreds of kilometers, until you come to the Masjid al-Haram. Then you do the tawaf, which we talked about last time, going around clockwise, with hitting the black stone and so on and so forth. That we all covered last time. Then you go to the sa'i. That was also last time. Go backwards and forwards between Safa and Marwa until you've stood on both four times. Then from there, you go to Mina on the eighth day. Before that, there was a khutbah on the seventh day, if you remember, at the Kaaba, a short khutbah. Then you go to Mina on the eighth day. You should go there in time to pray Dhuhr there and Asr there and Maghrib there and Isha there. You pray all of those short but not joined. Then from Mina, the next morning after you've prayed Fajr or Subh, you leave for Arafat. So you can leave after any time after Subh, or when it's light. Before going to Arafat, you stop on the Namira Mosque, which is just on the outskirts of Arafat. Some people include it within Arafat, but our position is you can't do the standing there, so it's not strictly speaking Arafat. And there you do a ghusl, if you can find the space to do a ghusl. And then you attend the khutbah and then pray the dhuhr and the asr with the imam there, joined and short. If there's too many people around the mosque, which often happens, then you go straight on to the Arafat plain, and you do your dhuhr and asr joined yourself, but short. Then you stay there the entire day until Maghrib. And you're spending most of your time standing, doing facing the Qibla and doing lots of dua and lots of dhikr of Allah. That's what you do mainly on Arafat. You try to stand as much as you can. If you have a sacrifice to do, say you're doing tatawwu', you're doing a tamattu', sorry, or you're doing hiran, and you've brought a sacrifice with you, you should have it with you on Arafat. So I don't know quite what they do in the modern era when obviously people are not bringing their own sacrifices, how they ensure that that happens. Maybe they just do all of the sacrifices now in Mecca rather than at Mina. Because one of the conditions for doing a sacrifice at Mina is that you have the sacrifice with you on Arafat. When you do the standing, your animal stands with you. So anyway, once you've done all of that, you wait until you're sure Maghrib has set, the sun has set, Maghrib has come. Once you are sure that the sun has set, you leave Arafat. You're not allowed to leave before then because your Hajj would be invalid. You wouldn't be counted as having stood on Arafat. You go between these two mountains, if you can, and that's where the line we reached, because we were on our way to Muzdalifah. So he said, وَفِي الْمَعْزَمَيْنِ الْعَلَمَيْنِ نَكِبْ. So between the two mountains that are well known, people there know them, Naqib, we go down from the plains of Arafat, and then we go to Muzdalifah. If you look on my little map, it's very crude. Muzdalifah here is about halfway between Mina and Arafat, or somewhere in that region. There's usually like hundreds of thousands of people all moving together in a sea when you leave Arafat like this. You're going along this road, then you get to Muzdalifah. Muzdalifah, you haven't prayed Maghrib yet, even though you left Arafat after Maghrib. You wait until you get to Muzdalifah before you pray. So he says, waqsur biha, you shorten it. You shorten your Maghrib, wajma' ishan li Maghrib, and join your Isha prayer to your Maghrib prayer. So you pray Maghrib and Isha, shortened and joined. If you can do it with the Imam there, that's good. Obviously, if you don't get there in time for the prayer with an imam, you do it yourself. You spend the night, but you have to at the least stop off at Mina. You can't just pass through, I mean, at Muzdalifah. You can't just pass through Muzdalifah. If you do that, you have to do a sacrifice. You have to stop at Muzdalifah in the night. Some people are in a hurry because of the crowds to get to the stoning so that they can do it early. So they, you know, before all the crowds come. And so some people almost scarcely stop at Muzdalifah, but you have to really properly stop there. Then just shortly after Muzdalifah is what's called the Mash'al al-Haram, or it's really on the outskirts of Muzdalifah. After you've prayed Fajr in Muzdalifah, you then go the short distance towards what's called the Mash'al al-Haram, or the sacred landmark, and you stand there and do some dua until what's called Isfar, or before then. Isfar is when you can start to make out people's faces quite easily before the sun has risen, so it gets quite light. That's the last time. You're not meant to stop at the Mash'al al-Haram after the time of Isfar. That's the end of the time of stopping there. So he says, Wahtut, put down your possessions, put down your things that you're planning to stay the night with. Wabit biha, and spend the night there at Muzdalifah. Wa ahyi laylatak. So he says, spending the night there doesn't mean that you're sleeping necessarily. He says here, bring your night to life. Do prayers in the night. Obviously, since at Muzdalifah, it's not always that easy to find a comfortable place to. They've made the pavements quite soft. So it's not too uncomfortable if you get a little sort of reed mat and lie down on the pavement, but it's not that easy to find a nice, comfortable sleeping spot. Wasalli subhak, pray your subh there in Muzdalifah. Waghallis rihlatak, and leave while it's still dark. Ghallis is the time of ghalas, which is just between subh and when it starts to get light. That's the time where you should leave your rihlatak, your departure. Your departure from Muzdalifah should be at the time of ghalas. If wad'u bil mash'ar, then he says, stop and make dua at the mash'ar, which is this place here. I said just after Muzdalifah. Lil isfar, until the time of isfar, when you're when it gets light, but before sunrise still. Wa asri an, then continue on your way. You're going here through a little place on this way, which is called the Valley of Death. So he calls it here fi botni wadi nar, in the when you get to the bottom, to the bottom of the wadi, of the valley of an-nar, of the fire. Asri an, go quickly. This is one of the things you do three times in the Hajj. There's three places where as a man at least, you're meant to go more quickly on Hajj. The first is in the first three circuits of the Tawaf. The second is on the Sa'i when you, I think I did a little thing of the Sa'i here, when you go between the green area here, it's marked with some green things, which is the middle of that valley, you sort of emulating Sayyidatina Hajar, you sort of run through that bit. And then you start walking again on the other side. And then the final one is here, the Valley of Death. But most of these apply to men. Women, it's not nearly so emphasized, especially on the Tawaf. وَأَسْرِ أَمْ فِي بَطْنِي وَادِ النَّارِ وَسِرْ كَمَا تَكُونُ لِلْأَقَبَةِ, and go as you are until you get to Aqaba. So we're coming through to Mina. Mina's here. You go. There's hundreds of tents everywhere here in Mina. On the other side of Mina, about 200 yards apart, there's three jamarat, three pillars. Although the jamarat is not actually the pillar. There's a whole catchment area, which is all part of the jamarat. So if you don't actually hit the pillar when you throw, you haven't actually, you don't have to repeat it, so long as it gets into that catchment area. The first one is called the lesser or the smaller one. Then you have the middle one. And then the final one, the last of them, the one that's closest to Mecca, is the Jamrat al-Aqaba. On the first day, before we left Muzdalifah, by the way, we picked up our pebbles, as he's going to tell us in a second. Seven for the first day, which is the day of Eid, the day of Nahar, the day of sacrifice. And that's only the Aqaba. And then either we pick up another 42 pebbles for the next 2 days, or if we're going to stone for three more days, we pick up even more than that. But you can pick them up again later. But the most important ones to pick up at Muzdalifah are the first seven. But it's also good to pick up the ones that rest that you have to throw, basically, which is another 42, 21 for each day. It's 7, 7, 7, 7, 7, 7 for the next 2 days. And then you can leave after the second day, or you can stay another day and then you have another stoning. So it could be an extra 63 or 70 in total. So he says here, Wasir kama takunu. So you don't stop at Mina. You've already got a little base in Mina. If you go on Hajj, you go to Mina before you go to Arafat. And then you find your little place where you're going to, where you're put. You're put in a particular tent with various other peoples. You have your place already. You don't stop there now. You keep on going straight through Mina until you get to the Jamrat al-Aqaba. Then you stone the Jamrat al-Aqaba. And he's going to come to that in a second. Farmi ladeha, then you stone or you throw when you are at the Jamrat al-Aqaba bi hijarin sab'a, with seven stones. You throw one stone, you say Allahu Akbar, then you throw the next stone, Allahu Akbar, throw the next stone, Allahu Akbar. No, not really any pause other than the time to say Allahu Akbar between each stone. And the first one, you don't do any particular place for dua, the first Jamrat al-Aqaba. The dua is between, for the other two pillars. There's places where you stand at the other two, just after them. So min asfal tusaqu min muzdalifa. So he says here, you throw seven stones from below. So there's above on this side, and then there's below, which is this side. And you're meant to throw from the lower side rather than the upper side when you throw the Jamrat of Aqaba. And he says here, tusaqu min Muzdalifa, these stones should have been picked up at Muzdalifa. Kalful, they are about the size of a baked bean. Something like that. They're not huge. They're not going to hurt people if you miss and hit people with them. Or they also describe them as a little bit bigger than a date pit. So you're not picking up rocks to throw here. It's not about trying to destroy this pillar. One har hadyan in bi Arafa. Then you do your sacrifice. If you have to do a sacrifice, we're going to come to talk about sacrifice a little bit later, exactly when you have to do a sacrifice. But there's also what's called voluntary sacrifice. Some people like to do a sacrifice anyway, just in case something went wrong on their Hajj. Also, the sacrifice for tamattu and qiran, some people consider it to be voluntary, even though you have to do it. Because if that animal dies en route, you don't have to replace it. And if it was not a voluntary one, you know, for example, if you're bringing it with you and so it dies before you get to Hajj, usually you have to replace the animal because you have to do the sacrifice. But there is a, when it comes to those for tamattu, but there's others who say that they are wajib. There's a difference of opinion about those particular sacrifices. One har hadyan, so you should now sacrifice your hadi. Your sacrifice that you've given over as an offering, comes to the same word of giving is in the word for sacrifice here, that you've given over as an offering to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And basically this animal, when it's a hadi, you chose it when you got the animal or when you decided. This was something we did, if you remember, back when we were at the miqat. We already marked this animal as being an animal for sacrifice. And remember with camels, that involved putting a garland of flowers or plants around its neck and making a mark in a tiny incision in the side of its hump, you know, and putting on a robe over the camel and various other things like that. But with the sheep, it's just saying, this is now an animal for sacrifice. The best type of sacrifice with this type of sacrifice is the opposite, by the way, of the Eid sacrifice. The Eid sacrifice, you go for quality over quantity. So for us, the best Eid sacrifice is the ram. The Messenger of Allah Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam sacrificed rams for the Eid sacrifice because they used to consider the quality of the meat to be superior for eating in terms of the ram. In the Hajj, you go for quantity over quality. So the best animal to sacrifice is the camel, followed by the cow, followed by the sheep. So if you can afford a camel, you should get the camel. If you can't have the means to get the camel, then you go for the cow. If you haven't got the means to go for the cow, then you go for the sheep. Then you go for the goat, like that. there's nothing less than a goat. If you can't find the means to get a sheep or a goat, then you have to fast 3 days on the Hajj and seven after, seven in the return. Some people say that return means to Mecca or returning home, because you return from Mina to Mecca. Some people say it means three in the days of Ishraq, or before, earlier on in the Hajj, and seven after you return to Mecca after completing your Hajj. Because as we're going to come to, once you've completed all the things of Hajj, you might still be around in Mecca for a bit longer. So you go there and there's various other things you can do there, including an Umrah. Wanhar hadyan in bi'arafah. If that you say you sacrifice this animal at Mina, if it stood with you at Arafah. In bi'arafah awqaftahu. If you stood it with you at Arafah. Then wahluq. Then if you're a man, it's best to shave your head. Now this is called the, once you've finished the stoning of Aqaba, it's called the lesser tahleel. You're now allowed to do things that you weren't allowed to do before. One of those things was you weren't allowed to cut your hair. You're allowed to do that now. So you're basically now allowed to, after stoning of Aqaba, you're allowed to do everything apart from sexual intercourse and hunting or killing game animals. Everything else is now halal for you. Although it's recommended that you stay in your ihram until you finish the tawaf al-ifada, your ihram clothes. And for women, obviously, they don't really have any specific ihram clothes, apart from not covering their face and not covering their hands, which we'll come to later. So wahliq, you shave your head. So you use a razor or whatever. If you're going from Mina, if you go on the road, there's hundreds of places that have this sort of offer this, both for men and women. Women, all you have to do is chop off a little bit. But, and this people should be aware of this, in the Maliki Madhab, when you chop a little bit off your head, it doesn't mean just a little bit from somewhere. You have to gather all of the hairs and chop a little bit of all the hairs. So for a woman, that might be quite easy because they have long hair generally. For a man, if they just want to cut, they have to make sure they cut from every place a little bit. You can't just cut like, you know, a tiny bit from the head there. That might be acceptable in some of the madhabs, but for us, no. You have to cut from every hair. Even if it's a tiny bit, even if you're cutting a millimeter off each hair. Wasil lil bayt. And now you head straight for the house of Allah. So this is going to be at some point on the day of sacrifice. Because you have to do this stoning of the Jamaat al-Aqaba before Maghrib on that day. That's the time for it, up until Maghrib. The whole day up until Maghrib is the time for the stoning of the Jamaat al-Aqaba. So you're going towards the house. It's recommended that you stop off on the way there. There's a particular place where people stop. And then you enter into the Haram after Isha. You pray all four prayers in that particular place, outside, and then you go in after Isha. But it's not a huge thing. It's like a recommendation rather than anything more than that. So we are now heading for what's called the Tawaf al-Ifada. So he says here, وَسِرْ لِلْبَيْتِ فَطُفْ. So you do your Tawaf. And this is the most important Tawaf of the Hajj. This is the one that if you don't do this Tawaf, you have no Hajj. Whereas if you miss out the first tawaf, which is also obligatory, you can make it up with this one. But if you don't do this hajj, this tawaf, you've got no hajj. You can do it later. You don't have to do it this particular day. You can do this tawaf a few days later, in fact. But it has to be done. This is called the tawaf al-ifada. If you're doing tamattu, by the way, you would have put your ihram back on the eighth day when you went to Mina, and then you would have done all the same actions as everybody else. But if you're doing tamattu, that means that you haven't done sa'i for Hajj yet, because you arrived in Mecca. Well, if you're doing tamattu, you arrive in Mecca doing Umrah, you do your tawaf and your sa'i, then you leave your ihram because you finish your Umrah. And then you re-enter Ihram for Hajj on the eighth day at Mina. So you haven't done a sa'i. So when you come to the Tawaf al-Ifada, you have to do a sa'i after it. Everybody else, people who are doing Qiran and people who are doing Ifrad, they don't do any more sa'i. They did it before. The people who are doing Tamattu and the people who arrived late to Hajj, but they didn't have enough time to do their Tawaf early and went straight to Arafat, also have to do their sa'i now. Is that clear? وَسِرْ لِلْبَيْتِ فَطُفْ وَصَلِّ مِثْلَ ذَاكَ النَّعْدِ. So do your tawaf and pray your two rak'ats at the end of the tawaf to seal it properly. مِثْلَ ذَاكَ النَّعْدِ. In the same way that we described it before. There's no difference. The tawaf is, every obligatory tawaf is done in the same way. In fact, every tawaf is done in the same way. Although the two rak'ats are much more, you cannot do without them for an obligatory tawaf, whereas the other ones, it doesn't invalidate your tawaf. Warajir. Then, as soon as you've done all that, go back as quickly as you can to Mina. So don't spend time outside of Mina. Spend all of your time in Mina, if you can. Don't hang around in Mecca to do prayers there, even though they're very valuable, as we know. In this particular circumstance, it's better to pray in Mina than it is to pray in Mecca. So as soon as you've done your Tawaf al-Ifada, don't hang around in Mecca, go straight back. Because staying the night and most of your nights in Mina on those next three nights is vitally important. And if you don't do it, you owe a sacrifice. It's one of the obligations of Hajj. So this is now for the person who went straight to the stoning, then went straight to Mecca quickly, then did the Tawaf al-Ifada, and then it's still daylight. He maybe hasn't prayed Dhuhr yet. He says, you go back and pray Dhuhr at Mina. Don't pray it in Mecca. So he says, وَارْجِعْ فَصَلِّ الظُّهُرِ فِي Mina. Go back and pray Dhuhr in Mina. وَبِتْ. And then spend the night there. Then إِثْرَ زَوَالِ غَدَاهِ إِرْمِ لَا تَفُوتْ. Then the next day, when you do the second day's stoning of the Jamarat, it's important to know that you're not allowed to do it before Dhuhr. If you do it before Dhuhr, it's not valid. So the time for the first day when you're stoning the Jamarat Aqaba is the whole day. The time for the next 3 days is between Dhuhr and Maghrib. That's your time for stoning all three. When you go back to stone all three, you stone the one that's nearest to the Mosque of Mina first, the small one. Then you go to the middle one. Then you go to the big one, which is Jamar al-Aqaba. You throw 7 stones at the first, then you stop afterwards in the same way that you throw through the stones on the previous day, exactly the same. Then you stop and make a stand and do some dua. Then you go to the next one, throw 7 stones, then afterwards stop and make some dua, and then go and do the Aqaba, and then you go back to Mida. They have a whole sort of a system now to stop people all going in the opposite directions. They have a one-way system, basically, where it brings you back to Mina. So if your camp is right here at Mina, very close to the stones, you have to go all the way around and all the way back around to get to it again. It's quite a long route. Warajia fasal al-dhuhr fi Mina wabit ithra zawali ghadai. After the high noon of your next day, stone, la tafut, and do not miss out a single stone. If you miss out one stone, then you have to pay a penalty of a sacrifice. You have to do 7 stones. If you miss out a stone from the first one, and you realize later, you have to go back and throw that stone you missed out from the first one, and then do the two that came after it again as well, to make them up. So even if you threw all of the stones of the second one and the third one, if you missed out one from the first one, you have to redo them completely. After you've redone the stone you missed from the first one. ثلاث جمرات بسبع أصيات. So you do the 3 جمرات with 7 stones each. لكل جمرة, for every جمرة. وقف للدعوات, and stand there to do your دعوة. طويلا إثر الأولين, for a long time after the first two. أخر عقبة, leave عقبة until last, the last of the جمرات. وَكُلَّ رَمْيٍ كَبِّرًا. And then say the takbir for every time you throw a stone. It's quite simple, really. So it's just after two things to remember. You throw seven stones and you say Allahu Akbar after each stone. as I said, you don't actually have to hit the pillars. But also, you should get close enough that you can get it into the catchment area, which is an area where all the stones drop into. You shouldn't be picking up your stones there, by the way, because the stones you pick up there, if you drop one, may well have been thrown by somebody else already. So if you want to throw stones, you pick them up. If you didn't get enough at Muzdalifah, you find them in Mina. There's plenty of pebbles everywhere. وَفْعَلْ كَذَاكَ ثَالِثَ النَّحْرِ. Do the same thing on the third day of Nahr. So the third day of Eid for us, when we're not on Hajj, the third day of sacrifice there. So the first day was Aqaba. The second day was when you threw your stones at all three. Now the third day, you do exactly the same thing as the previous day. Again, after Dhuhr, or not, after high noon, I should say, because it doesn't matter when you've prayed Dhuhr. After high noon until Maghrib is your time slot that you have to do the throw. Wazid in shi'ta rabi'an. And if you want to add a fourth day, you're welcome to do that. Watamma ma qusid. And by that, what is intended of my explanation to you of what you do on your Hajj is complete. So there's a few other things that he mentions later that are sort of additional things, but they're not sort of obligatory parts of Hajj or any part of the Hajj that you have to rectify with a sacrifice. These are the obligations. If you want to leave after 2 days, you're allowed to leave after two extra days, after stoning the three twice, but you have to make sure that you leave before you get to Maghrib. Because once you're there, you're spending the night there. That's important thing. So if you want to go after 2 days, don't just hang around there. If you want to finish, finish. If you want to stay there, then you do what you need to do on the next day. So any questions about any of that? Because that's actually the end of his explanation of Hajj. Even though after this, there are a number of other things he mentions right at the end of this chapter, which is that you go to Mecca and you do an Umrah if you haven't done an Umrah already. If you're there for long enough by going out to Tanim. But he's going to go into that in more detail just after he goes into Ihram. So are there any questions? No, it's all quite self-explanatory. We'll do a couple of lines from the Ihram. وَمَنَعَ الْإِحْرَامُ الصَّيْدَ الْبَرِّ بِقَتْلِهِ الْجَزَاءُ لَا كَالْفَأْرِ. So he says here, Ihram, what does it mean to be an Ihram? We talked about Ihram earlier, but what does Ihram prevent you from doing? It puts you in a state where things are haram on you, but what are those things? So he says, he lists them, and there are about five or six different things he mentions. The first one here is Sayd, which is land animals, game, wild animals. Doesn't apply to domestic animals. You're allowed to kill domestic animals, even when you're on Hajj, even when you're in Ihram. But you're not allowed to kill game animals. You're not allowed to kill animals that live in the wild, even if they are things like lions and tigers and even things like wasps, things like that. You're not allowed to kill them when you're in Ihram. You're not allowed to kill them when you're in Ihram, and you're not allowed to kill them when you're out of Ihram, but you're in the Haram. Those are the two places. That place makes killing game, or even hunting game, because you never know, you might wound it and it might die somewhere else. You've got to be careful. Even hunting game is just not allowed for anybody in the Haram, and it's not allowed for anybody in Ihram. And if you kill it, he says, oh, this is Sayd al-Bar. There's something called Sayd al-Bahr and Sayd al-Bar. Sayd al-Bar is land animals, what you hunt on the land, and Sayd al-Bahr is what you catch in the sea. If you're in Ihram, you're allowed to catch fish from the sea or from the rivers or from the ponds or from streams or things like frogs, which live most of their life in water, or turtles, which live most of their life in water, and so on and so forth. Although I think the Hanafis consider turtles to be forbidden because they classify them alongside the tortoise, which lives most of its life on land. But Imam Malik differentiated between the tortoise and the turtle. If you kill them, you have to do what's called jaza, reprisal, requital, give something in recompense for that. And when it comes to game, this is determined by two hakams. So two people come, trustworthy people. They can be appointed by the authorities, or they can just be people who have that trustworthiness. They're adil and they have wisdom and they have fiqh. And a person decides which type of jaza he wants to do. So he has a choice between either getting an equivalent livestock to sacrifice, or he feeds people based on the value of the animal he killed, in the value in wheat, or he fasts based upon the value of the animal in wheat. Yeah, we're fasting one day for each two muds of wheat that it is worth. Okay, but that value is worked out by these two judges. He chooses which of these three he wants to do. And then the two judges say, okay, right, you've chosen to fast. Well, the value of the animal is 18 muds, for example, of wheat. That means you have to fast 9 days. Or the judge, he says, I want to feed. So the two judges work out the value of the animal. They say, okay, the value of this animal is 18 muds. You have to give 2 muds to 9 poor people. So you pay it in muds of wheat. Or you can say, I want to sacrifice an equivalent livestock. I want to do a sacrifice and I want it to be an equivalent livestock. Say it's like an antelope that you killed. He might say, okay, the equivalent is a cow, for example. Or if it's like a gazelle, he might say the equivalent is a sheep. And that would be worked out by people who have the knowledge of this and are able to work out that sort of thing. So that's what jaza is. It's to do with the size of the animal that you kill. If it's a small animal, like a wasp or something, you give like a handful of food or something as recompense for that, something small. But there are certain animals you are allowed to kill. And when we've gone through this, we'll finish for the day, inshallah. The far, which is like a rat or a mouse. The aqrab, which is a scorpions. The hida, which is like it's a type of bird of prey, like a kite, that's quite aggressive. Attack people and things. Other birds of prey, you're not meant to kill unless they actually do attack you. If they do attack you and you kill them back, it's fine. It's like lions and tigers and hyenas and all these sorts of things. If they attack you, then you don't have to do the jaza. But if you are the one who initiates against those types of creatures, by even setting up a trap when there's no danger from them, for example, then you would have to pay jaza. Then he says, kalbin aqur. So dogs, but here it means like a dog that's a rapacious, you know, maybe it's a hungry dog that's, you know, somewhat aggressive. You're allowed to kill those creatures. Wahayya and snakes. Ma'al ghurab, which is crows or ravens or something, a bird of that size. Idh yajuru, when it is attacking, when it's sort of like, you know, they are a type of bird that can get very, very bold. They can come and try and take your food and even peck at you and things like that. If they're doing that, it's fine to kill them. So those are the various lists of creatures that, even though you are in ihram, if you kill them, there's no penalty to pay. Okay, we'll finish there, inshallah. We've probably got one more chapter of Hajj, and then we go on to Tasawwuf, inshallah. Any questions? All right. Assalamu alaikum. We'll finish with the salawat on the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam. Allahumma salli ala sayyidina Muhammadin abdika wa rasulika nabiyyil ummi wa ala alihi wa sahbihi wa sallim taslima. Subhana rabbika rabbil izzati amma yasifun wa salamun al mursalin walhamdulillahi rabbil alamin. Assalamu alaikum online as well.